listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about how you survive. I began the whole series on surviving kind of by accident. I didn't mean to be doing a series, but we started that first week off with how you survive separation. And so many people said, oh my gosh, I need more help on how to survive other things. So I came back and I talked about how you survive infidelity. And then I talked about how you survive conflict. And I've talked about how you survive that golden hour, your opportunity of making something different. And today I want to talk about how you survive, not just survive, but pull closer and begin to thrive through the empty nest and midlife. If you have kids, hopefully you get to face that empty nest. In fact, if you have kids and you don't face the empty nest, then there is another crisis that you might need to survive, and that's how to survive the adult kids staying at home. But for the most part, we want to talk about that empty nest as a kind of a normal, natural transition that often coincides with midlife and a midlife crisis. So first, let's talk a little bit about why this is a crisis for the relationship at all. A lot of people think that they can hit the pause button and come back to their relationship down the road. In fact, I talk about the pause button marriage, where you believe that right now you've got to deal with parenting, with raising the kids. And so you hit the pause button, and maybe you're dealing with parenting, or maybe you're dealing with graduate school, or maybe you're dealing with climbing the corporate ladder or building your own business or lots of other places where we might hit that pause button. There's a problem with that. There's no such thing as a pause button in a relationship. Relationships are either growing or receding. Relationships are either building or falling apart. That's the only way that relationships can be. If you think about relationships like an organic a body or a plant, there always has to be a flow of nutrients. And in a relationship, the nutrient flow, the lifeblood of a relationship, is connection. And so part of what happens in a pause button marriage is you hit that and you pause your connection. You stall your connection. You stop your connection. And in that process, you stop the circulation, that connection circulation. And over time, it begins to atrophy. Over time, it begins to starve for that connection. And over time, that begins to put a place of crisis for one or both people in the relationship. Unfortunately, not many people know that. And so a lot of people have hit the pause button in their relationship, expecting that once the kids are out of the house, or once the kids are old enough to take care of themselves, or once that career is launched, they'll come back together and have a happy time. That's not what happens. Instead, two things often coalesce at the same moment. Empty nest hits at about the same time as a midlife crisis. In fact, they are interrelated. Think about the timing of empty nest. For many people, the earliest that that happens is around 40, and it stretches on sometimes into the 60s. For most people, that's the range. But for many people, it's about from 40 to 55, and that's the point when the kids are launching, beginning to move off to college or move out on their own, getting married, kind of making that transition. Maybe they're just getting a new job after high school, but somewhere along the way, they get to the place where they are no longer needing parental support, at least the way they did. A lot of times the parents are then safety nets, but they're out of the active parenting role. And suddenly the house gets quiet. And suddenly the couple's staring at each other, wondering what happens now. That also coincides with the time when in life, when meaning begins to be more important, when midlife questions begin to arise, when we begin to wonder what all this is about. So here are a couple of pieces that are in that mix together. One is a loss of role. For many people, the role of parent has established their identity. You know, if you listen to couples and they refer to each other as mom and dad, and they never talk to each other as husband and wife, their role has become anchored in the child. But even if they've managed to not have that happen, they still have the role of parenting that has defined that age, has defined that span for them. So maybe they spend a little bit of time together before they had kids. For most people, that's a matter of several years at the most. And then the kids come along. And then there's this span of sometimes 18, 20 years when you're actively parenting, and maybe even more if there are multiple kids. And during that time, the role begins to be cemented not around the couplehood, but about the parenthood. So when the kids are launching, suddenly the role you've been building and growing and developing and understanding in yourself is pulled away. It's gone. Then there comes another piece, which is the lack of diversion from each other. You know, sometimes the kids begin to be the buffer zone. Instead of having to deal with each other directly, you end up going through the kids. And because of that, you don't know what to do when that's no longer there. You don't know how to come back together. And so the lack of diversion and the intensity of pressure on the relationship begins to mount. Maybe you spent a lot of time being very connected with your kids. Maybe you did a lot of things with them, more so than as spouses. And so as you're going to all those family events, you've got the kids that are also diversions from the two of you and buffer zones between you that mean that once they're gone, there is an intensity that hasn't been there perhaps for 20, 25, 30 years. And suddenly you're looking at each other going, who are you and who am I? And the who am I question brings in the meaning and purpose question. Meaning and purpose begin to loom, which leads us to the midlife crisis. A midlife crisis is really a combination of three things that are happening simultaneously: mortality, meaning, and memories. Mortality, meaning, and memories. Mortality means you realize you're gonna die. Sometimes that hasn't occurred to us. I mean, we all know peripherally that that's the case. We all know that that's kind of the end of what happens in life. But sometimes we pretend that's not the case. Hey, go to your bed. We act as if we're going to live forever. You notice how many people do high-risk things along the way in younger life because they don't think anything can happen to them. And it begins to dawn on us sometime in our late 20s and 30s and into our 40s that there are some risks. And sometimes it's because we injure ourselves. Sometimes it's because we see people that we know become sick or even die. Sometimes it's because we watch our parents get to that place and where they're aging and maybe even dying. And so all of that begins to bring out the question of mortality, which is the deep and clear understanding that you're going to die, that there's only so much time left, and you don't know what the expiration date is. So mortality begins to be a focusing point. It makes you aware that there are only so much time to do what you want to do, and you don't know how much time that is. I know for me, when I got sick, that was a focusing event in my life. When I got sick and I realized that there were a certain number of days left and I didn't know what they were, I had to ask the question, am I spending my days doing what's important? Not frittering it away, not just doing my life, but doing what's important. Doing what's important to bring a sense of meaning and purpose. And am I doing what's important to make a difference in the world? Mortality is the question that raises that. The second thing, meaning. Viktor Frankl tells us, after his experiences in watching his psychiatric patients and then going through his own time through concentration camp during World War II, that meaning is what brings it to us. Meaning is why we live, and lack of meaning is why we get lost. The deep level of meaning that humans have is an innate, inborn, necessary piece. So if you're living to a place where through your life you've kind of escaped from meaning, you suddenly arrive at a place where you realize that that's a looming piece. It's possible that you found your meaning as a parent along the way, and then you realize that that's a temporary space. You realize that even though you will always care and love and have concern for your child, their need for your presence has begun to diminish or even disappears. And suddenly the place where maybe you were getting meaning and you weren't even clear about that disappears. But for other people, it's just the fact that life has continued on and you were thinking that that was going to give you the place of meaning in your life. And yet that place of meaning in your life is no longer being filled by whatever that activity was. I've talked to many people who find that they get to this career point, and what was happening up until then was they were responding to competition. They love the challenge and the competition of climbing upward. And then one day they get to this place where they're thinking that now they've gotten there and they realize that there isn't a big sense of meaning there, that they've only gotten to a new place that doesn't give them what they were expecting. So their meaning begins to crash down upon them because they don't have a deeper connection with that. So that begins to create a stronger and stronger sense of the need for meaning without being able to name the need. And then there are memories. And memories come in two different categories for this, regrets and resents. The regrets are what we wish we had done, and the resents are what we resent other people for having done to us, or resentment along the way that we've built into relationships. The regrets are often about how we've treated other people, the paths that we didn't take, the opportunities we let pass. All of those pieces begin to kind of roll around within us. And then the resentments begin to take their toll, where we begin to be more pointed about the obstacles people put in our paths or the way people treated us, the places that we feel like we weren't given the right opportunity to move through. Those three are powerful places. Mortality, meaning, memories, to drive a midlife crisis. Layer on top of that the empty nest, and then you have an intensity with the loss of role that can be very powerful. So how do you survive this? Let me suggest five different pieces of the puzzle to surviving this. One is time. Empty nest is something that over time gets easier as you begin to rework your habits. And so it's just waiting it out. There's a process to getting used to something. I remember the first time when I realized that I was not going to be taking my kids to school. And it was a little bit painful when I realized I wasn't going to have that role. But then some weeks passed and months passed, and suddenly I was not even worried about that anymore. My whole day had begun to circulate differently. And the same with lots of other pieces as my kids began to become more and more independent. It would hurt in the beginning, but over time, I would readjust. My life would begin to rebuild around it. And so one of the things I always recommend for people who are dealing with the empty nest is to give it a few months. Just give yourself some space in a few months to find a new rhythm to life, to find a new pattern to your life, so that time kind of reweaves our ways of interaction, that we're getting onto a different path. The second thing is evaluation. With the kids needing us less, it gives us an opportunity as parents to ask the question, now what? How do I want to move forward from here? Now what? What's important? Now that I've moved through that, what opportunities do I have available to me? Now what? So an evaluation is a beginning to look around about how your relationships are, how your marriage perhaps is, how your job situation is, how your outside interests are. Is life running the way you want? For some people, it's about a shift in career. For some people, it's about a shift in geography. For some people, it's about a shift in finding some new hobbies, some new interests, some things to do that bring something new in. It's an evaluation period to say, where do we go from here? Which brings us to number three. You notice I didn't say a new relationship, because I believe there's also now space for new connection. If you're staring at each other going, I don't know what to do, you follow that up with, so let's figure it out. How can we move through this together in a collective way, as a team, to face this together? Part of that building the connection is realizing that connection is not just with your spouse, though. You may begin to build connection with other groups. And I'm talking about safe connections here. I'm not talking about connections that can cause problems in the relationship. For instance, as my kids began to move out and leave, I began to work towards building some groups of other people so that my wife and I could build our connection. But I also had some other connection points with other people that were deep and rooted. So I began to create different peer groups for myself that would allow that connection to not just be so intense in the relationship, but to have outside places. We all need more connection. And the question is how you build it. So if you're waiting for midlife to suddenly get focused on your spouse, recognize that your spouse may not be ready for that focus, that you may want to arch that out a little bit and look for other places for safe connection. Which leads us to number four of purpose. Part of that connection may be finding a deeper purpose in your life. You may say, I've always wanted to do more volunteer work, or I've always wanted to start this second business, or I've always wanted to do some other piece of life. That can be the place of purpose. While we're talking about purpose, purpose is your activities externally that can lead to the deeper meaning. If your spouse is in the middle of a midlife crisis, and maybe you're just kind of looking at the empty nest, one of the things I recommend you do is build your own life of meaning and purpose to make some differences around you, which will help you make sure you never get stuck in a midlife crisis, but it will also show your spouse something else, another way of moving into the world with a deeper way of meaning and purpose, a deeper way of making a difference. Talk about it scratching an itch that they didn't even know they had. They begin to watch and see what you're doing, and that can help them understand that that's the same path they need to make. While I'm talking about that, I want to let you know that probably the last thing you want to do is turn to a spouse and say, you're probably having a midlife crisis. The last thing anyone in a midlife crisis will admit to is that they're having a midlife crisis. In fact, when people come to me and say, I think I'm having a midlife crisis, usually they're at the very tail end of the midlife crisis. They've already moved through it. The defensiveness comes on the early side when they don't want to admit that that's possibly what it is, partly because of the caricatures that we've gotten in culture and some other kind of negative connotations of that midlife crisis. They don't want to be reduced to a crisis. They want it to be much more real than that. And yet many times the crisis, the midlife crisis, is what's causing the problem. So as you're building your own meaning and purpose, you don't need to bring up the midlife crisis flag to recognize that may be affecting your spouse. And that brings us to number five, a fun activity to do together, the life list. If you and your spouse are going, you know, what are we going to do now? What's the next chapter of life look like? I would suggest the life list. It's been called the bucket list. I don't like the bucket list because, you know, it's about racing before you die, racing to get these things done before you die. And I would just say, these are the things you want to do in life. So the way you do this exercise is for both you and your spouse, each, to sit down and write down your life list. What are the things you want to do? What are the experiences you want to have? Now, these aren't the kind of the financial goals of life that'll get you bogged down. These are more the things like, I want to go to France, or I want to go to China, or I want to learn to scuba dive, or I want to learn the guitar, or I want to learn to speak Japanese, or whatever it is, any of those events where you want to experience something new. And write those down. So once you and your spouse have spent several days compiling the list, and the reason you do it over several days is because you're going to have those moments where you realize that there's something else you would like to put on that you didn't think about. But after you've done that, then you and your spouse go somewhere nice, maybe out for dessert, maybe out for coffee, and you trade lists. And you look down both lists, and what you'll recognize is that there are a couple of different categories. One are the things that both of you agree upon. Two are the things that didn't occur to you, but you would love to either see your spouse do it and do it with them so that your spouse has that experience, or that you would love to do it also. So now you have a grouping of things that you would love to do together. And then there is another category of things that you would love to support your spouse doing, but you have no desire to do it yourself. No need to go on that trip, no need to take those classes, no need to do that. So it's really two groupings, the things you could do together and the things you can support your spouse doing. Notice that what's lacking in that is a third category where you say, you can't do that to your spouse. This is not where you say, that's not okay with me. This is where you say, let's make room for this and let's work towards this together. And then I would encourage you to choose three items. One from each of the lists, where each of you have something where you can support the other person doing it. And the other is something you could do together. And then you get busy moving towards those pieces. Start planning them. Start working towards, start taking action towards those pieces. My guess is what you'll find is there's a new level of connection. There's a new lifeblood, new circulation going on. And now you're about planning for the future and thinking down the road about what could be a great place to be. What could be a great relationship between the two of you? And the relationship piece begins to take care of itself, as does the midlife crisis. If this has been helpful for you, and you're still looking for a plan on how to do this, how to survive all the marriage crisis, I would love it if you would grab my Save the Marriage system. You can find that at savethemarriage.com. That's savethemarriage.com. Once you go there, you can find how to just instantly access that material and begin working to get the relationship where you want it. During that time, I'll also offer you, if you sign up then, a free week of my VIP coaching where I give you extra training and coaching to help you move your relationship to the next stage. And we'll also throw in a get started conversation with one of my coaches at no obligation to you, just so we can make sure that you are on task. If you're interested in that, please check us out at savethemarriage.com. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage and survive the crises as they come.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.